On today's College Football Inquirer, Brendan Sorsby is playing and everyone else is angry. A Texas court granted Sorsby an injunction that will allow him to play for Texas Tech this year, despite having gambled on his own team while at Indiana. Now everybody else in college sports is trying to figure out what to do when you've got rules that cannot be enforced. Because if you can't enforce, don't gamble on your own team, you probably can't enforce anything. So what happens next in the Big 12? What happens next with other conferences now refusing to schedule Texas Tech? There are a lot of tentacles to this one. Ross Dellinger and I will break it down on the College Football Inquirer today. This is College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger. I am Andy Staples, and Ross, we got something dropped from a courtroom in Lubbock. Actually, from a judge who lives in Fort Worth, who filed to a courtroom in Lubbock. Something that will affect the entire country. Brendan Sorsby's playing.
Yeah. What a day. I'm not sure. I mean, we've had some wild court decisions and crazy unprecedented days, a lot of them. I feel like the word unprecedented is used a lot in the last 3 to 5 years in college athletics. But this one ranks up there. You know, Andy, when... Diego Pavia got his eligibility ruling. I feel like that was one of those days that was like on a Wednesday or Thursday on Christmas week. So it was a little bit, overshadowed, but that day, you know, the day the House settlement was approved, the day the Alston ruling came out, we've had a lot of these days, the NIL era, it kicking off. I mean, a lot of this one feels almost different, which is maybe what you're about to say, because this is like the cardinal rule of any American sports franchise and entity. Don't bet on your team.
Mm-hmm. The Alston ruling was big because it was the Supreme Court. It was 9-0 against the NCAA, but you had lots of people who were rooting for the plaintiffs in the Alston case because not everybody agreed with the NCAA rules against compensating players. Ditto for NIL rules, ditto the Diego Pavia thing. You know, lots of people are like, okay, why are you treating JUCO years differently than years in the NCAA? How come you can't take 2020 and make that a free year? That is different. Other than Texas Tech fans, and I get it, you're fans, but other than Texas Tech fans, there's no one here who sides with Sorsby on this. Everybody is siding with the NCAA, which is saying something considering it is one of the most reviled organizations in the world.
Yes. For those watching on YouTube, even my cat, which has randomly jumped in my lap once in on this conversation, everybody wants to talk about how mad they are over this ruling. And that is what makes it different from a lot of the others that I think we've seen in the past, is that it does seem like I think the founder of this show, Dan Wetzel, mentioned 8.7 billion people versus one Texas judge, because no other worldwide sports entity allows an athlete to play if you bet on your own team. So it's a lot against very few. And I think, Andy, you know, the reaction that we've seen sort of is, you know, because of that, because of how lopsided people feel about this issue. And certainly I've never had administrators, I think, go on the record with some of the comments that they did yesterday. And I think it is because this is just sort of the one line you don't cross. And now the ramifications of it, right, are pretty wide ranging and could really lead us down the path that we have talked about on this show for a long, long time, which is finally a breaking point in a way. And I know we overuse that. Well, now this is the seminal moment where we're going to have this breaking point, whatever. But I think the comments yesterday, and not just the comments, but the decisions with inter-office memos to coaches at schools saying, don't schedule a certain school, Texas Tech, is a sign of already a break from normal operating procedure.
Yes, and I think that's one of the most interesting things. There's short-term solutions, long-term solutions to this. Long-term solutions, you've got, interestingly enough, Cody Campbell, Texas Tech mega booster, who is perfectly fine with Brendan Sorsby playing, who says, this means you've got to pass the Protect College Sports Act, which, by the way, does not address this at all. You've got people like me who've been saying for years, if you collectively bargain this stuff, you can have rules that you can actually enforce. I wrote a column at On3 today, just posted on Tuesday morning, that says, hey, if you would like a solution to this, there's really only one. It won't be easy to get to. You'd have to figure a lot of stuff out. But if you had a CBA, you could enforce this. Like, Jontay Porter did not sue the NBA when he got banned because there was nothing he could do about it because there was a CBA. Calvin Ridley didn't sue the NFL when he got suspended for a year for doing basically what Brendan Sorsby did because there's a CBA. There's nothing he could do about it. And that's where they probably need to go, whether they're willing to go there. We've talked on this show a bunch, Ross, about an openness to discussing it lately. I would imagine this makes it a lot more open. But I want to talk first about the short-term stuff because I think that's more interesting. So Georgia and Nebraska, their ADs issued memos to their athletic department saying, do not schedule Texas Tech. The Big 12 ADs are going to meet on Tuesday. Big 12 presidents are going to meet this week. I have, you know, I'm sure you've been bombarded with fans asking, well, why don't the Big 12 teams just say they're not going to play Texas Tech? It's not that easy. But there are multiple short-term solutions that seem fairly drastic and not like something you would have expected this time last week.
Yeah, it's in the absence of national rules and enforcement, the schools are taking matters into their own hands, you might say. That's sort of what this seems like. You have schools, and it won't just only, you know, be two, right? Nebraska and Georgia. I think there are meetings this week in the Big Ten. There's meetings in the SEC. Now, all these are previously scheduled meetings. I mean, ADs and commissioners meet once a week in most leagues. And so they'll meet, and I'm guessing this will come up of, do we need a widespread, more policy against scheduling Texas Tech if they play Brendan Sorsby? And rather than do it school by school, do we need more of a league-wide mandate? That's going to be fascinating to watch. But the schools and the conferences themselves, I guess, if they do that, are taking matters into their own hands in the absence of rules and enforcement. And what, to me, that's one thing. Set that aside. The other thing, and maybe the more important thing, is what will Big 12 presidents do, right? Because they have the ability, and I have some of the bylaw information here on the Big 12. So the Big 12 has a bylaw, and I'm gonna credit Mr. Scott Schneider. He's a Austin attorney, Austin-based attorney who does a great job with. I've quoted him and interviewed him before, and he's found the bylaw. And he's got specifics on it. So the Big 12 bylaw 3.6, it talks about sanctioning a member. You know, a conference may sanction a member by a supermajority of the directors, of the presidents.
Disinterested directors. The people who aren't the ones being punished.
So 15, right? It'll be 15. So 12 of the 15, a supermajority, maybe?
Parts of the bylaws, it is funny because it doesn't say it in this section of the bylaw, but in other parts of the bylaws, it says 75%. So you would think 12 of 16. Question here. Texas Tech is obviously the target of all this. Can Cincinnati vote on this? Because Brendan Shoresby played for Cincinnati for the last
maybe
2 years.
Maybe they're interested. They're an interested director.
Yeah,
but maybe,
exactly.
Maybe so. But this gives them, you know, it gives them the ability to penalize and sanction a member school for sort of like actions or conduct that's detrimental to the conference or the directors feel like merits sanctioning. And I'm guessing Texas Tech's ability or Texas Tech's decision to play Brendan Shoresby is going to be something that Big 12 presidents believe merits sanctions. I don't know what they'll do, right? Because it sort of sets a precedent. You know, a lot of people were comparing
this. Can you
punish
somebody for something they haven't done yet? Because
they haven't done. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. No, that's a good point too.
Shoresby has not played. And I think Scott Schneider and I were looking at the same clause here last night because I was going through and I've been trying to get back and forth with the Big 12 because the copy of the sanction or the bylaws that's available on the internet is for a 10-team Big 12. But I would think they just added the names of the new schools because this is a very pretty broad and intentionally vague document. But it actually does have some specific example penalties. And it basically says in the clause, this is just an example, by the way. You can do whatever you want. Mm. But the examples given are prohibitions on appearance in postseason events or televised events, restrictions on revenue distributions, and limitations on recruiting or scholarships. So, like, theoretically, they could ban Texas Tech from the Big 12 TV package. My sense is they wouldn't do that because that punishes whoever Texas Tech's playing also.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's something they want to do. But these are unprecedented times. I don't know what they'll do. I do know, Ross, that at least from who I've talked to, the plan is for Brendan Shoresby to play. That his camp is not concerned about any sort of nuclear action by the conference, you know, because he has until June 22nd to declare for the supplemental draft if he wanted to do that. But they are full speed ahead. They believe that he will be playing for Texas Tech this year. And we should note the judge, and this is one of those where the judge issued him a suspension.
Yeah,
but if you know the history of this case, that probably makes it look even worse. The judge issued a 2-game suspension, which is essentially the same two games, Abilene
suggested.
Christian and Orange. That Shoresby's attorneys offered the NCAA when they were talking to the NCAA before the case got filed.
Yep. It is, think about where we are in college athletics, that a judge isn't just granting an athlete who acknowledge that he bet on his own team multiple times in a bunch of thousands of pro bets, but he's suspending him 2 games as a condition of his injunction. It's pretty wild. It's again, I've used that word, unprecedented. I've never quite seen anything quite like this one. We've had even a lot of recent cases, the Bediako, the Trinidad Chambliss, but this one kind of sets it apart. And I'll be fascinated, Andy, to see what, you know, Big 12 athletic directors are meeting later today. By the time you listen to this, they'll probably already have met. Don't expect any decisions or anything like that, right? They're not the authoritative body to make decisions on this. Obviously, like we talked about, the presidents and the chancellors are. And they'll meet, I think, later this week. And I'm sure Brett Yormark will lay out to them, here's a detailed sort of analysis of the bylaws that we just mentioned, and here are potential options, even suggested options to take moving forward. And I'm just guessing, given the fact that, as we discussed earlier, there's so many people outraged over this, and this is like the cardinal rule that you don't violate. I'm guessing they'll do something. I don't know exactly what they do. And you know, maybe they don't do anything at all. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they just point to the court and say, well, we're kind of hamstrung. We can't do anything. But Andy, it's a really good sort of, this situation is a good indicator of, can a conference really govern and penalize itself? We talk a lot about, and people yesterday commented in that story that I wrote about, this more than ever shows we need, all the conferences need to have their own rules and enforce themselves and maybe even play themselves, right, as the SEC's talked about. And this is a good example of, well, can you do it? Will you be able to enforce rules in your league? It's not easy slapping the wrist of your neighbor.
Not easy, but must sometimes be done, I think. But that's the question. And when we come back, I think we need to talk about that question, because I actually wrote a column about this last week, because people kept asking me, what would it, because we were talking about in the context of the SEC breaking away, because they were rattling their sabers about that. And people asked me, you know, what would that look like? And so that was something I explored. And the biggest problem is what you just talked about, Ross. It is the willingness to be governed, the willingness to govern your buddies. Can it be done? We'll talk about it when we come back. But first, I'll let you know the all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. Make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. Play solo, create a private group of friends, join a public group to play with other fans, or even join the Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. I've already put my picks in. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. That's yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. We'll be right back. Back at the College Football Inquirer, and let's talk about conferences governing themselves, conferences disciplining their own members, because I think that was theoretical last week. It's now not so theoretical. But Ross, before we do that, you mentioned the appeals process before we came back on the air, and I do want to explain that to people, because I think everybody's like, well, the NCAA is going to appeal the decision that the judge made in Texas, right? Yes, they are. But Ross, can you explain the calendar as it relates to the appeal?
Takes a long time. The estimate that I've received is usually like 8 to 12 months. And obviously, for an appeal to get through and get ruled on in the system, they're going to expedite, like any injunction appeal is. This gets a little expedited. I think the NCAA would try to speed up the process as much as possible. I don't know that they can. Also of note, you know, the appeal will go to you know, the primary court, which, by the way, is four Texas Tech alums.
Guns up, baby.
So unless they recuse themselves, you may imagine that there's probably a slim. It's tough to win an appeal anyway, right? It's certainly tougher probably to win an appeal in a situation like this one. And it, even if you do win it, right, it might come 7 months from now or 9 months from now when it's too late.
The thing to remember here is they're not appealing the verdict of a case. They're appealing an injunction. And the appeals court is going to give latitude to the presiding judge issuing an injunction. Because all the injunction is, hey, this person shouldn't be harmed while they're going through the normal legal process to get this case concluded. Now, we all know there is no getting this case concluded. This case isn't going to get concluded. It was about getting the injunction. The injunction was the ultimate victory for Team Sorsby. So, yeah, basically, they're going to run the clock out on the NCAA. And Brennan Sorsby is going to play unless the Big 12 were to do something drastic. And that is what we need to talk about now, Ross. Is we talked in theory about what it would look like if conferences ruled themselves, had their own rules, had their own enforcement, had their own everything. This is no longer theoretical because the Big 12, as we discussed in the previous segment, has the opportunity to do something here. It's within the rights of the other Big 12 schools. Like, presumably, now I will say I did not see in the bylaws what the expulsion parameters would be. That would be the ultimate nuclear option. I don't know how that works. But they can sanction them.
They can, yeah. That definitely would be the nuclear option. You know, we've talked a lot about expulsion of conference members in relation to the participant agreement, the CSC participant agreement, which I believe was actually signed by all the Big 12 schools, but they're the only league to have signed it so far, and it's only actionable. That's not the right word I'm looking for. What am I looking for? It's only
enforceable.
Enforceable. If all the power leagues,
sorry, we don't sign. Use that word anymore because it doesn't exist in college sports. Because
there's no enforceability of much at all. So and you know, it's a spark that conversation more and more of, hey, the conferences, we should have our own rules and enforce them. But Andy, you know, we talked about it a lot, but there probably are people listening that are kind of like, well, how would that solve the problem? And it's two ways, right? If you took the national rules that the NCAA is supposed to regulate, but that has been, the NCAA has been sued over so much that they can't regulate them. If you took those rules and you just allowed each conference to enforce those same rules or similar rules, one, it's easier to enforce and regulate and govern a smaller group. And two, the bigger group, the NCAA was sued so much successfully because they have market power. And there's the thought that on the conference level, that these individual conferences don't have market power and they will evade antitrust lawsuits. That's the theory. So that's kind of the gist of why you would do it. And then, of course, another nuclear option, as we've mentioned, as the SEC, some folks in the SEC have mentioned, is if everybody doesn't, of all these conferences, especially the Power Four, don't all have similar rules that they enforce in a similar way, it affects the equity of the competition. And thus, and you've heard Georgia's president say this, we'll just play ourselves and we won't play anybody else. Mm-hmm. And he said it again to us yesterday in light and in the wake of the Soresby situation.
But the thing is now, you have an issue, and this is why I brought this up in the column I wrote last week about the SEC. And I used a quote from Greg Sankey when you and I were in the room together. When Greg Sankey says this, he said people have to want to be governed, and the question is, do people want to be governed? Because so Jerry Moorhead, the Georgia president, talking about the SEC just playing itself. Okay, let's port that over to the Big 12. Let's say the Big 12 is going to enforce its own rules, going to do things differently than everybody else, and they decide they're going to do a conference-only schedule. Big 12 teams only play Big 12 teams. If you get into this situation right now, what do you do? Do you pull Texas Tech off everybody's schedule? Because that would be your solution. That would be the way to pressure them.
Right. Presumably, you would have a conference bylaw that you would enforce that would prohibit a player who blitz on its own game, his own games, to play. So you'd be able to enforce that. But Andy, you know, you got me thinking about something.
How do you enforce it? Texas Tech's going to see this, and this is
the, they would the sue the conference.
The willingness
they
to
would
be
sue
governed
the conference. Yeah, that's the question. Right.
You had the NCAA as the boogeyman out there before. The conference office was the buffer. Conference office is a good cop. NCAA is a bad cop.
Yeah.
And now you got to be the bad cop. Are you ready to get sued by your own members? Because that will happen.
So This goes back to the good old participant agreement, which waived, schools waived their right to sue the College Sports Commission over enforcement entities. And I think in any, Andy, in any conference-only governance model, the league members would all have to sign something to waive their right to sue the conference office.
And agree to arbitration, basically.
Right,
and
right. That's what would have to, it would be individual participant agreements.
Here's the thing though, like, and so your contract probably works this way. I know mine does. Like basically in my contract, when I sign it, I agree to settle disputes through arbitration first before anybody files a lawsuit. The difference with these large universities that are mostly public institutions is they have proxies that can sue on their behalf. So they don't have to.
Attorney general.
So you can sign, yeah, you can sign any agreement you want, but your attorney general can still sue for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm suing. You know, I am the attorney general of Texas. I am suing on behalf of the people of Texas who own Texas Tech University.
So then, Andy, it gets back to our earlier conversation of if that would happen, then the conference would have to enforce penalties. Even if that would happen, maybe they would have to enforce penalties on the school, not the player. It would be one of those things of you can play the player, but if the court ruling doesn't mention the school, then you could potentially penalize the school, which is what they're going to talk about, I think, you know, this week, I'd imagine.
Yeah, talking about sanctioning the school. You're going to get the players suing the leagues, too, in this case, too. But yeah, they have to be willing to do it. It's a question of willingness more than anything else. They have to be willing to punish a fellow member and accept punishment if they're the ones who screw up next time. And everybody's all for rules when they're not the one in the defendant chair. But that's the issue. Because I think about, you know, the Alabama Charles Bediako case you mentioned. This is the basketball player who played in the G League, and Alabama supported him suing the NCAA to try to get an injunction. Now, they didn't get the injunction. He played on a temporary restraining order. They tried to get the injunction. They didn't get it because that judge is like, I don't want to be the one who opens this Pandora's box. But you had the SEC commissioner coming out against the Alabama player in court. But would he have done that if he'd been the defendant? Probably, yes. Yeah. Producer TJ asked a good question. You know, would an attorney general necessarily step in if they're from a state where multiple of their schools are represented? So in the Big 12, for example, the Texas AG may not be as incentivized to step in on behalf of Texas Tech because, you know, they also represent Baylor and TCU.
But TCU is a private school. Right,
but Houston, so those are school.
Right, it would be Houston. And, yeah, Houston would be the good example.
And you still have political cronies who went to Baylor and to TCU, who will try to put their thumb on the scale too.
Yeah, Baylor's private too. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but this is why I always say, like, with the NCAA, don't mess with Nebraska, LSU, Ohio State, or Tennessee.
Yeah,
because their attorney general doesn't have any conflicts. They're just going to help protect that university, but. This is the issue that they're going to get into. And I don't think that the Big 12 schools have the guts to do anything about this. Because, like, I got asked this question yesterday. As soon as this came down, I had a viewer from my On3 show send an email saying, well, couldn't the schools that are scheduled to play at Texas Tech this year, the Big 12 schools, there's five of them, couldn't they just say we're not doing it?
They've talked about that.
They could, but then you also run into Fox and ESPN saying, hey, we have a contract here.
Yeah.
Are you going to take away some of the best games of conference play because you're mad?
Yeah.
Because we need to be made whole for that. So we're not going to pay you as much as we were going to pay you.
Right. Oh, that's another part of this, right? And we talk a lot on the show about how TV networks... how involved TV networks are in decisions within college athletics. And I think that I'm sure TV networks would be involved in some way in all of this, even if it's not actually making the decision. I'm sure their influence would be felt in the room, so to speak. So yeah, we're gonna see how a conference may enforce its own rules with this situation. It's going to be sort of fascinating to see what happens here. And I know, Andy, we might get to in the last segment, but the discussion around, well, the other option around this, right, is the collective bargaining sort mm-hmm. of option. A lot of people keep pointing, and it was a big part of my story yesterday, keep pointing to like, this is why we need congressional legislation, right? You saw Charlie Baker do yep. it. Congressional legislation probably actually wouldn't impact this specific situation. Yeah, it wouldn't help. Now, if they rewrite the bill that's currently, correct. And they add in gambling, sure, mm-hmm. but it's a narrow antitrust that only grants the NCAA the ability to enforce transfer eligibility and that codifies the House revenue share.
Also, this was not an antitrust case.
Right.
This was not an antitrust case. This was a breach of contract case in a state court. So you can't write a federal bill that keeps people from suing somebody mm-hmm. in state court over a breach of contract. You just can't. It's too broad. Now, you could theoretically go get the federal gambling laws rewritten. It's a federal crime to fix a game. If you change it to you can't bet on the game if you're a player in the game, or a player on one of the teams, I don't think most people would disagree with that. I think that would be a fairly easy thing to get through. Like, the sports books wouldn't have a problem with that. They want the games to be perceived to be on the up and up. So I'm not sure who would complain about that. So there may be a congressional solution, just not an overarching college sports bill as the congressional solution for this particular thing. But that wouldn't necessarily stop what happened with Brendan Sorsby. What that would do is would make it a federal crime to do what Brendan Sorsby did, which I think would be a fairly effective deterrent.
Of course, there's a bunch of state crimes, state laws that he violated, right? Including in Texas. Yeah.
But he's not been accused of them. And that's the other thing. You can say, well, that would be the solution. Okay. Well, you have evidence of bets he made and what he did, but you don't have, not a single law enforcement agency has accused him of a crime yet. So that particular avenue has not done anything here. So I think the collective bargaining piece of it would allow them to enforce their own rules, because there would be rules that the players agreed to. And I'm getting a lot of questions about my column about, well, how would you even get to the players to the table? Who would employ the players? The conferences would employ the players. If a Super League were to form, the Super League would employ the players. The players would probably be separated by sport. So football would be its own bargaining unit. How do you get the players to the table? You lock them out. Unless they're prepared to start their own league or they got a heavy war chest, guess what? Your lockout's not going to last through spring practice. They'll come begging you to make a deal. So it's not easy by any stretch, but it's doable, and it is the one thing that would avoid what happened on Monday. So we shall see. Ross, when we come back, though, let's turn it to Brendan Sorsby himself, because he's obviously a much more public figure than he was even 6 months ago when he was one of the highest profile quarterbacks in the transfer portal. He still has NFL draft prospects, which whether he plays this year or enter the supplemental draft, that's something we got to talk about. But yeah, what does this mean for him, and what happens next for him and the football team itself at Texas Tech? Talk about that when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and we've been talking about the Brendan Sorsby decision and what it means for everybody else. Let's talk about what it means for Brendan Sorsby. So the plan is for him to play at Texas Tech He can start playing game three, which would be Houston visiting Texas Tech on a Friday night in the Big 12 opener for both teams. That's going to be a big game, Ross. And Houston, actually one of the better teams in the Big 12 last year. We think they're going to be fairly good this year. For those who don't follow as closely, Texas Tech was the favorite to win the Big 12 in 2026. Definitely still the favorite to win the Big 12 in 2026 now that Brennan Sorsby can play. But what about Brennan Sorsby and the NFL draft? Because obviously they would rather him play than him enter the supplemental draft, because he could have just entered the supplemental draft and not done this and not fought for this. Clearly, he wants to play. He believes it'll help him down the road. There's bird in the hand because they're paying him, we think, between $5 and $6 million this season to play for Texas Tech. But what happens next for him, Ross?
Yeah, talk about a target on your back. It's one of those things. It's kind of like we knew Trinidad Chambliss was going to have a target on his back. And it's kind of like one of those hold my beer situations. I feel like there should be a meme of Trinidad, you know, and Sorsby, and Sorsby saying, you know, hold my beer. I'll take the bigger target. Cause that's certainly, and you know, a lot of people have mentioned this, Andy, including Gene Taylor, who sort of went off to me yesterday with some of his quotes. And one of the things he said was, I understand that the kid may have a problem, a gambling addiction, a gambling problem. Well, then go sort of deal with your problem. Don't make it worse. In a lot of ways, right? This is sort of, you know, making it worse in a way. I mean, I know he wants to play in college. I know he wants to play his last year. He's promised all this money. I get it. But at the same time, if you truly have a gambling problem, right, you probably don't need to put a bigger target on your back. And man, this whole situation has gotten that for sure. I mean, Andy, they travel to Cincinnati, his former school. Yes. Can you imagine, in a city that also loves a certain baseball player that bet on his own games and didn't get in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, that is
can't write it any better than that, huh?
Not lost on me, and that game was already, you know, before this scandal broke, before Brennan Sorsby was accused of anything. That was a game everybody had circled on their calendar of, okay, here's a quarterback who left this team because he believes he has a better chance of winning titles, of making more money, of doing everything with this other team that's in its league. We have a couple of those this year. Darian Mensah at Miami plays against Duke. But Sorsby has to go back on the road to the place that he left. And that is going to be absolutely fascinating. Now, as far as the NFL goes, maybe I'm being a little too galaxy brained here, Ross. I want you to help me with this. Because if he'd had to enter the supplemental draft right now, for those who've never followed the NFL pre-draft process, like, they dig through every piece of your life. They know everything about you before they take you. And so the scrutiny he would be under here would be pretty intense. Everything that was admitted in court documents, the NFL already knows. They know what's not been admitted in court documents. So I actually think if he has a good year and is not gambling, which, again, the NFL people will find out if you do or don't, that he has a better chance of getting drafted higher next year.
Because for sure.
He will have been able to demonstrate for a time that, hey, I got treatment, I got better, I was not gambling, and here, look at how well I played. Now, if he doesn't play well, guess what? None of the other stuff will matter. Because they'll say, oh, we thought you were better than this. And then his draft stock will slide. So it's really up to him to play well. And that's the key. Now, I think a lot of Cincinnati fans have reminded me that he was 1-11 the past two Novembers. or 111 in November. I think that goes back to his time at Indiana as well. So that's another piece of it. He's got to improve on that. Like, that's a legitimate thing NFL people would have wondered about if the gambling stuff had never come up. So if down the stretch in conference play, he's balling out, Texas Tech is winning, that will help him, regardless of anything else. But also, him being able to play with everybody knowing what happened, if he doesn't relapse, that will help him too. That said, again, cutthroat business, you better be good. If you're not good, the other stuff doesn't even matter.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people said this about Brendan, the same as they said about Trinidad. Oh, just go to the NFL, right? Just go. Why are you sticking around? And people often point to the money, right? I mean, $4 or $5 million, both those players probably in that range or so, if not more, for Trinidad especially. So there's the money issue, that they could get paid just as much, if not more, right, than they would get paid at least in their rookie year in the NFL. But also there's what you just said. There's a chance with another season that they can improve their stock and really land a jumbo sort of rookie deal. And I think that's a big part of the case here. And also, number three, Andy, hey, you're a millionaire and you're in college. I mean, I had fun in college when I had, like, you know, $200 a month from my parents. Imagine having $200,000 a month and how fun college would be.
Yeah. Producer TJ asks, is there anything in the ruling about if he places another bet? Yes, the ruling does say that he has to give progress reports to the NCAA. And I would suspect that if he gets caught, there's really not much they can do. So I think the court probably abandons him at that point. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. I want to hear what the Big 12 people say when they cool off a little bit, Ross, because I think yesterday, like, you had a sitting AD on the record say this is effing BS, but did not censor himself at all. Like, I got to ask you, like, when you're talking to Gene Taylor and he says that, you go, is that on the record?
Well, funny story about that. because that quote obviously went crazy. And even though I think the more important quotes in the story from Gene and Josh Brooks are about how we're not going to play them, right? Yeah. I think that, and then that took off, right? And there's all this other stuff going on, other schools, Nebraska, and a lot of people. I think that's sort of we're going to see a lot more schools say that. But, you know, Gene was one of the first people I called yesterday because I knew how passionate, number one, I knew how passionate he was about this topic. And number two, he's sort of long in the tooth, right? In a long tenured athletic director, you're usually going to get more honesty, especially they're going to feel a little more emboldened to speak if they're sort of older and lead the room. And he's certainly a respected administrator across the country. And we began talking off the record. And, you know, he said that quote. And then we shifted to on the record for a lot of the other quotes you saw in the story. And I think Gene has shared this with people, so I think it's okay for me to share this. He texted me back 10 minutes after the call, unprompted by me, and said, you know what? You can use my effing quote. So I was like, are you okay? Okay.
That's
so
awesome.
He's very angry. And you know what? You know, this week, I'm not there. I'm at home, obviously, but in Vegas is NACTA, the annual gathering of like 3,000 administrators, mostly associate, you know, athletic directors, deputies from Division II, Division III, but some FBS ADs go at least for one day. And so a lot of them are there. And I heard that Gene's quote was a big topic, a discussion, and you can imagine 99.9% of people agreed with him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I had the exact opposite situation happen to me earlier in my career, and I've because of what I'm about to say, I can't say who it is, but had an athletic director call me, just blowtorching somebody. I'm not going to say who because I don't want you to try to guess who it is. And I'm like, the call was unprompted, and the person was saying, "This is on the record," blah blah blah. And I'm like, "Oh my god, this story is going to blow up." And I get the story ready to go. Because it's a sensitive topic, I just check one back one more time, like just making sure this is all accurate. This is what you said. The person calls me back. I don't think I can do that on the record. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, I've gotten that at least a couple times, if not a lot more in the career. That's where they have the cool down period. The cool down period, Andy. But Gene did the opposite, which speaks to
how mad
I just think how frustrated him and a lot of other people are at this issue. It's just, again, I go back to like, it's the one thing, right? And it's too bad we don't have Godfrey on this pod, and he'll be back soon enough. But I'm sure he would argue with that, right? That it shouldn't necessarily be the one thing. We've heard him argue that before, and everybody's got their opinion. But the vast majority of people believe that this is the thing, this is the line you cannot cross.
Well, and that's the thing I've noticed more than anything else is, at least with fans, with readers, viewers, listeners, people who interact with us every day, there have been differences of opinion about most of these issues. It's people on either side of them. Other than Texas Tech fans, there's nobody on the other side of this issue. Everybody is, and Godfrey, I guess, but everybody else is pretty much in the same place. And I find that exceedingly rare in this day and age. And that's what makes this so interesting to me, because you wonder if someone will take extreme action. And like I said, I don't think the people in the Big 12 would have the guts to do it. But I also didn't think there would be one issue that galvanized people the way this one seems to have. So I could be wrong on that. And we could be due for some more fireworks. And I think that's the craziest part of this, is there the actual potential, I don't know if the solution is not even the right word, but next steps, I guess, next actions are pretty extreme if they're actually going to do them. Like, nothing is the more likely possibility, and they just yell and blow off some steam. But if they actually do something, anything, it's pretty extreme. And I think that's what makes this interesting.
You know, Andy, people are comparing it to the Big Ten and Tony Petit's decision with Michigan to penalize Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh over the sign-stealing situation. Mm-hmm. That was a... Tony Petitti took that on himself. That was a commissioner provision in the bylaws that the commissioner had authority. In this situation feels a little different in that it will be sort of left up to the member schools to do. Before we wrap, there's two other big things coming this week. Obviously, we have the president's meeting, but there's two other Big 12 president's meeting and potential penalties. There's two other big things. While you're listening to this, perhaps the SEC and Big Ten presidents are meeting with Maria Cantwell and Ted Cruz, the two U.S. senators, Tuesday evening on a call as the senators try to continuously sort of convince them in a way to get on board and support this Senate bill. So that's happening, and that's something to watch as the Senate bill negotiations continue, and we may see next week a markup, the next step in the.
If they're smart, they'll throw a little gambling clause in there just to.
They'll do. That's right. They'll amend that. Yeah, amend the bill. And then the second thing going on is, to me, the biggest thing is, the plaintiff attorneys in the House case have a hearing on Wednesday. Jeffrey Kessler, who was, it all ties together, right? Brendan Sorsmeier's attorney is also the attorney in the House case. And He has challenged, filed a complaint basically to the judge in the settlement, in the House settlement, saying the CSC is violating the House settlement by restricting athlete NIL pay from associated entities, sponsors, and multimedia rights partners. So to dumb that down in regular old layman's terms, the cap could be just completely uncapped.
Yeah,
if Jeffrey Kessler wins this argument,
you could funnel all your money through your MMR, Learfield, Playfly, whatever it is, your own in-house one. You could just funnel all the money through that, and it would be unlimited.
And schools are doing that now, obviously, but there is a process of being scrutinized in some of those deals through the College Sports Commission. There's over $100-125 million right now just in the system that's been rejected or under review. Though all those deals, or most of those deals, I guess, not all of them, most of them, would be whoop right through the system and approved if Kessler wins this motion.
And
then,
everybody else would adjust so that there really would not even be a system anymore. So that's why that's big. You're right. Wednesday's also my wife's birthday, and stuff like this seems to happen on her birthday. when USC got punished in the Reggie Bush case, that was on her birthday.
Oh boy,
she was not.
No slow days, and no slow even in the middle of June. No off season summer slow days. This era of college athletics,
no off season does not exist.
No.
Godfrey will be back Thursday. I'm anxious to hear how he feels about this because I know he's in a little different spot than everybody else. So we'll have a fairly lively discussion about that. We'll talk about what happened. Probably at that hearing. I don't know that we're having a result of that one yet with the CSC, but we also may know more about whatever's going to happen next in the Big 12. This one's got some legs, folks. We're talking about it probably for a lot of the rest of the summer. See you Thursday.